came in peace for all mankind. Welcome back to NASA Vending Machine, maybe Titan Vending Machine this week. This is the show where we recap For All Mankind on Apple TV. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined on this mission to the outer reaches of the solar system by my co-pilot, mission specialist, Jason Snell. Hi, Jason.
I've got the controls, Dan, and I'm going to take us in for a landing. It's going to be...
What are you doing over there? Anything shady? No?
No. Okay. Everything's fine. Look away.
Okay.
Yeah. It is Season 5, Episode 7, Sirens of Titan, which is a Kurt Vonnegut reference, by the way.
Yes. Yeah. That's nice in
for
there.
Fun.
I like that. Well, Titan is very alluring on this episode.
It's horrible when you try to land on it and a lot of sirens go off. One of those.
Yeah, also bad. Well, that happened for some people. Let's get into it, shall we? So you may recall that last week ended was kind of a big, tense episode where a lot of things happened on Mars.
Lock the doors.
Lock some doors. Stuff was getting bad.
What time is it now, Dan?
6 months later. I mean, you and I were talking a little bit about this. The time jump, I can see why they wanted to do it, because it ratchets up some tension. It adds some, like, things have settled into a new normal.
The show's done this before. It's like it's trying to tell a story that happens in a fairly compact time frame, but it's not always, like, in a week, right?
Right. And they want the Titan stuff, and they need the time for them to get there. Etc.
Yeah, and the escalation of everything else that's been going on is the ramifications of what happens in the last episode. It's just the last episode felt like it ended on a cliffhanger. And did you do what I did, which is like, did I play the wrong episode?
Yeah. 6 months. 6 months later. Okay. Anyway, so we're kicking it off with our Titan team, Kelly and Walt, and the rest of them. They're having a chat with Cosmos, which is the Kurgan mission, and they're having a problem. They have miscalculated something about their burn, and they are not able to decelerate enough, and they're going to get pulled into Saturn, basically.
Or at least the radiation belt around Saturn, which is going to kill them, basically.
It's going to be bad news.
Yeah.
They are not only not making Titan, but they are dead.
Yeah.
So that has cast a bit of a pall over the Titan mission.
Yeah, there's a... They're in contact with them. Our Titan mission is in contact with their Titan mission.
Yeah, because the only people nearby, right?
Yeah,
There's no one else to talk to.
And they try to give them advice, but it doesn't really matter. We have missed Titan, they say. And then they say, tell our colleagues that we tried and we love our families very much. And they're like, we'll be here with you. We'll talk you through it. And they're like, not interested.
Hello?
Yeah, hello? Yeah,
They're gone. Meanwhile, back on Mars, Lily and Alex have greenhouse duty.
Yeah, they're working in a cornfield.
My reference for this one mentioned there's one point where Alex is kind of like zoned out. Clearly, he's thinking about his mom. They've heard, I guess, about this point about the Cosmos not making it to Titan.
Yeah.
And so he's kind of worried about Kelly. Lily's trying to get his attention. And at one point, she says, Bueller. And I was like, good news. They still have Ferris Bueller.
Yeah.
Well,
they got a lot of movies on hard drives that they watch when they're bored on Mars because they can't go outside. I like the line, don't worry about your mom, she's going to be fine. Aleta would beat Saturn to death if anything happened to her.
So I don't think he says death. I think he says something more colorful.
Oh, yes, well, okay.
But still, I also wrote that line down because I laughed at it.
Yep. Good stuff.
Lee is running stuff in the greenhouse.
More work, he says.
And we learned that Alex somehow never gets fertilizer duty with everybody else overnight. Is that relevant? We'll find out. So one of the questions we had last time was, like, are there supply lines essentially for Mars now that the M6 is cutting them off? And we do learn, in fact, that ISN has been supplying them with some stuff, but the problem is that because the M6 is ticked off, that is having repercussions back on Earth. And if ISN keeps trying to supply Mars, you know, sort of behind the back of M6, the M6 is going to take that out on the ISN countries, and that's bad news.
Yeah,
so ISN is having to pause their aid, whatever they've been supporting them with for the last couple months.
Geopolitics on Earth is going to make them pause their aid. Now,
yeah.
I will say, because this comes up a bunch, I think this is interesting because it's like officially this is happening. I'm not sure that if your dome is next to a dome full of people who are about to starve to death, I'm not sure that
you ethical.
I'm not sure you cannot render aid to them because your boss is back home said don't do it. But well, it's just I that was a thought in the back of my mind. It doesn't really kind of play out where it's necessarily going to be that relevant to it, I don't think, but at least not in this episode. But like that was a thought I had is this struck me as being more like officially we cannot give you aid, so we're going to stop. And like maybe in the back of everybody's mind is the idea that like, yeah, if you're all going to die, we'll see what we can do. But until that day, we can't, the official transfers policy is over now.
Right. They're like not in the greatest shape, but they, you know, they have some resources. They have enough to, I think, hold out for a little while longer. I think they say 2 months in a subsequent scene. And so it's not like they are in immediate dire need. They just will be in dire need. And the whole point is this is pressure being exerted to get them to start sending the Iridium back again and basically cave.
Yeah.
We learn that, you know, they, among other things, they have crops that they are trying to develop to help become self-sustaining using those greenhouses. But those are going to be a few months away, too. So they may not be ready in time. We also learn that Palmer is still MIA. They've been trying to track him down. Yeah. But he and his remaining peacekeepers are still out and around. There are hidden access tunnels that Dev has built that the peacekeepers are using to get around and cause problems for the rest of the Mars folks. There's a lot of tensions. Dima, who's sort of the medical advisor on the board, is saying, well, they can cut rations further. And as he gives the example of like when they first landed on Mars and they didn't, you know, have enough food. And so they can keep cutting because the human body can handle it, but obviously it's not going to make people happy.
Yeah.
Manifestos from people who want to go home. There's a petition for people saying, like, hey, let's send us back. We don't want to be here anymore.
200 people want to go back to Earth, and they only seem to have 2 months of food left, so it's not great. Although, I think those things go together. I mean, that somebody points out, like, well,
more people
if we don't have many mouths to feed, that's good for us. So, you know, can we send them back? But, you know, oh, this is the moment too where it's like, look, it's not like anybody's being held captive, and they're like, well, I mean, the governor, the arena, I mean, not anybody who matters, but the big point is that if you want to send them back, you're going to need to talk to Aleda because she's running, you know, ship traffic essentially, and so if they're going to load up a ship with people and send it back to Earth, she's going to need to be the one to make that happen. Which everybody looks at Miles, like. You're the only one she doesn't hate. You have to talk to her.
Yeah.
And again, she would beat Saturn to death if anything happened.
Yeah, I wouldn't mess. Yeah.
No.
I
love her reputation. I love it.
She's super tough.
And yeah, it's great.
So we have, this is the SDM Council, and they're threatening Mars independence. We see a little bit of the shot of things back on Earth where there are pro-Mars protests across the U.S. and USSR.
Oh, and Lee is a big player. When we saw Lee last week,
he showed up.
But like Lee is
part of the upper echelon.
A huge player in all of this. Yeah.
We see Lenya, our governor. He has he's wearing Ed's old ankle monitor.
Yeah. Oh, so good. Such a great callback there.
I know that was a nice bit of like they did that business at the beginning of the year so that we could explain this very quickly. We show that they were basically like, you know, under house arrest. They have exercise time where they have to go out and walk in a circle.
Can we talk about the exercise? I love it. They go, there's that room with the tree.
Yeah.
And the exercise is you walk around the tree and I guess talk to Irina. There are two scenes where they're exercising and they're walking around the tree. And I just want to point out, I believe for variety, the first time they're walking clockwise around the tree and the next time they're walking counterclockwise around the tree. And I was like,
legs.
You never know which way you're going to go around the tree for your exercise.
You got to keep some mystery.
just variety has, for the prisoners. Yeah, sure.
One of the great moments, another great callback, where Irina is here. She and is talking to Lenya and basically relaying what's going on Earth. And she's got, like, intel. And he's like, how did you find out this? And she says, they don't know how to run a jail.
Yeah.
Which, of course, harkens back to her experience in the Siberian prison camp that we saw in the flashbacks earlier this season. And clearly, she's still working her KGB intel. She relays that Lenya's wife is basically being pressured to denounce him and is going to have to go on TV and say, because she has worked so hard trying to get him released, she's annoyed the president and therefore of Russia, and therefore she's going to be basically thrown to the wolves.
And also an important tidbit here, too, is that, like, Korzhenko, the president of or the premier or whatever he is of the Soviet Union, he is feeling he's under pressure, and that's important, like, geopolitically, and we'll get more of that later. But she says he is using you as a vehicle for his failures. Like, it, rather than take the hits, he has decided to pass them all on
to
Polivanov.
So Palmer is in the Helios compound, and he goes to see Dev, who is kind of secluded himself. He's
still wearing their woodpecker uniforms, which I was like, these guys are just clowns. Come on.
Yep.
But they are. That's who they are.
Dev is kind of running this show, and it's unclear, but Dev is clearly, like, masterminding whatever little insurgency that this guy has argued or has set up. However, they are running out of food because they don't have the resources that the rest of the compound does. And so that's causing some tension there. Dev seems to have a plan that we're going to learn a little bit more about later.
So I want to stop you here because this is one of my big questions. I had it last time. I think we've talked about it the last couple weeks, and I have it here too, which is I do not understand what Dev is doing.
Yeah.
I watching this episode, Lauren was like, are there two rebel groups? And I'm like, no, like, these are, because Dev reads as being, like, on Alita's side, but Alita's, like, sort of on their side, but really she's just supposed to be neutral and running. And I know he's got a corporation, and the corporation Helios is also back on Earth, and there's a lot of political pressure because they are working with the M6, so, like, they can't rebel against it. This is, like, a very, in part, it's like a story about, like, the corporate interests mean that they're not going to get involved in this because there's too much money back on Earth, so they can't do it, right? Like, that, I get that. But, like, Dev, first off, he's got his whole, like, I'm for automation because in the end it will lead me to my city. And I'm like, yeah, but the automation is going to send all the humans off of Mars. How does that lead to your city? I never really bought that. And then this of, like, Dev is conspiring with Palmer. I don't know.
The best I can give to him in this scene is that he is vindictive. Like, that he got at the end of last time, we see he basically gets his ass kicked, right?
Yeah.
He gets beaten up by a lot of people. And I think there's a part of him, and we know that Dev can be petty, and he can be you know, mercurial, and he can be ruthless. Like, all those things are true. And I think it makes more sense to me to see him in, like, kind of lashing out against these people that he feels are not properly thankful to him for everything that he is trying to do. That reads a little better. But yeah, I agree. The automation thing did not quite jibe because it felt like, I mean, his argument last time was, if we don't do this, they're going to do it anyway, essentially. And this way, at least we'll have some control. But it never really made sense. And then we had his whole interaction with Alex where he's like, Alex is like, this isn't how, you know, you shouldn't build the city like this. And I think Dev is kind of interested in playing God, right? He wants Mars to be able to, like, I'm going to set up a city and I'm going to design it, and it's going to be perfect, and it's going to be this utopian experience, and like, we can start over, right? Like, we can create a civilization here that is its own thing. And maybe he just feels like the people are not thankful enough that of all this stuff that he's trying to bestow upon them. And that is why he is lashing out. But I agree that it feels tenuous at a couple points, especially because I think as much as I like Edie Gathegi's performance, he can be very hard to read. He plays Dev as very close, he keeps everything close to his vest. He doesn't really have friends. He doesn't confide in many people. He doesn't open up.
Yep.
And so it's hard sometimes to know what that character really thinks.
And
we don't really get it here.
Yeah, I agree. And it also keeps me thinking that Dev has a bigger plan that he hasn't told anybody about. But I don't know if that's just my imagination. I do think the show may be saying here essentially that, you know, in the end, Dev is a corporate interest. And so
he's a billionaire.
Mars, even if he's got these dreams about Mars, he's a billionaire with money, and that money is on Earth, and the corporation is on Earth, and that, like, he can't just rip the Band-Aid off and say, look, Mars is free now. But so all that said, I don't know. Everything we've seen about Dev and how they try to portray him as being, you know, more human and connected to, like, Alex and all of that, like, just having it be 6 months later, here's Dev conspiring with Palmer. Like, I don't know.
Odd bedfellows, to say the least, and I agree that I don't find those two to be... It feels like, if anything, they are temporarily aligned, but not, like, strategically aligned.
But the show, the way they portray it is like, well, 6 months later, obviously these guys are in cahoots and they're working together on this. And I'm like, what? And then I think this is what Lauren's reaction too is, like, I do not have those two people on the same team. So you telling us they're on the same team, I guess what I'm saying is, for the last 5 minutes, you and I have been trying to understand why this is the way it is.
Yeah.
I think that's a writing failure.
Yeah,
we are trying to supply a reason why the images on the screen are what they are. And I think that the writers either are trying to withhold something from us, or they just kind of didn't do it right. Because I think this is a mistake.
It feels like an assumes facts, not an evidence situation, where it's like, yes, again, with the 6 month time, but you could see, like, maybe if this was directly after and he's like, well, we are allies of convenience in this moment. But 6 months is a long time to have to sit with what you've done. And is there, you were expected to believe that at no point during that period he kind of looks and thinks, maybe I've hitched my horse to the wrong wagon here.
And honestly, the way I read it when he says lock the doors and all of that was really going to be more like the corporation was going to say, you all just do whatever you're going to do, and we're going to be in our corporate environment, and we're going to pretend that things that happen in the world aren't happening, which is a very corporate executive thing to do. Not that I'm thinking of anything in particular there. But instead it's like, no, he's like getting his hands
actively
dirty
in the insurgency. Yeah. This is, it feels like a thing, a convenience of expediency, right? Like, well, we have these two characters who are both not aligned with our heroes. And if we need to have them working together, because otherwise it's not interesting to watch Dev sit in his bunker for the next 6 months.
Stroke his chin. Ask how Alex is doing.
Yep. How's he doing? He's doing okay. All right.
In the corn.
So Elaida's talking to Sojourner. They discuss what the problem with Cosmos One's calculations were. They miscalculated the atmosphere density.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the question is, can they actually pull this off? Walt wants to abort the mission. Kelly wants to keep going because Kelly is pulling an Ed. And I like this moment a lot, because he's like, we should take a vote. And he's like, your dad didn't take votes. And I'm like, you know what? He is right.
It's absolutely right. What I will say is, yes, the commander needs to decide what happens. But I will say, and this is because the show wants to bias us against Walt. But like, this is dumb. Because what you do is you radio back to Earth and say, I'm unclear about this. I need more assurances. This seems risky. Because in my opinion, Alita's in charge of this mission, not Walt.
Right.
I get that the commander of the mission is the one who's out there putting their life on the line and they need to make the decision. But the way that this is portrayed is like he's a chicken and he's going to turn tail and run because he's afraid. And I think that maybe isn't fair, but I think the show wants us to feel that way. And the fact that he doesn't talk to I almost said Earth, Mars about this, doesn't talk to the Moxie about this, and instead is just like, I'm out of here. This is too scary because people died and now I'm spooked about it. Like, I know, I see what the show is doing here. It makes him look like a dummy, and well, I think the show wants us to, but he's not wrong. But like, he's in charge, not Kelly.
Yeah, and that's the character we've been given to understand him to be, right? He didn't want to go in the first place, right? Like, Kelly essentially talked Dev into sending the manned mission. He was all like, let's send probes, etc. And the idea, I think we are meant to see him as embodying the more cautious and more conservative, as opposed to Kelly being the like, look, we're doing it, we're out here, we got to take a chance.
I get it. And he's placed in opposition to Kelly.
It's not quite fair to him, but that's who he is.
Yeah, he's placed in opposition to Kelly. Yeah, I think it's fine. I just want to point out that like he's a little cartoon villainy.
He's a little two-dimensional, yes, in his portrayal.
But that allows Kelly to do the, you know, we didn't lose the moon race. My dad chickened out on Apollo 10 and didn't land.
Yeah, which I thought was a fun moment too, because that's an ongoing thing, right? Yeah, he regretted
forever.
It. He's got that plaque.
Yeah,
he got to keep.
The, he got, the, they he just, got the for
they
all mankind
let him
plaque.
Keep
yeah.
the plaque thing.
Yeah,
fine.
All right. Embarrassing.
So Miles goes to ask Aleta if she can basically let them send the people back to Earth. Do you want to go back to Earth? Yeah. We talk a little bit more about like what's going on overall. They talk about the money system breaking down, maintenance issues piling up, and everybody's kind of like, you know, everyone was jazzed up in the moment, but now reality is setting in and they're like, we are trapped here. We don't have a resupply coming.
I like Aleta saying, this is when you find out who your real friends are. And no, I'm not your friend, but I'm not your enemy.
Aleta.
But reality reality setting in is really good. Like she calls it the coup, and he's like, well, and she's like, own it, Miles, it was a coup.
It was a coup.
Yeah, she's so great. She's so no nonsense. Like she's the counterbalance to all the people, to like that guy, the one guy who's like, let's shoot people and all that. She's like, just call it what it is, Miles. You need to own it.
Lenya gets to watch his wife denounce him on TV, but realizes she's using blink code and doing Morse code by blinking.
Yes, to say I love you.
Exactly. Is it important? I like that he spends much longer trying to decode this than I got two letters in. I was like, dude, come on.
I-L-O, and it's like, oh, I get it. It was like loaded a gun.
I lost everything.
Yeah, I know. That's not what it is. So, yeah, that's funny.
He does not entirely trust Irina, but since they are in the same boat, he has to ask her for help.
Yeah, walking counterclockwise around the tree now, yes.
Yep. And she wants to do basically something about Krashenko, because she thinks he is essentially weak.
So
she's
playing
kingmaker
here. In custody on Mars, Irina is like, we're going to get rid of Krashenko, and you're going to be the president of the Soviet Union. And he's like, and he says the right thing, which is, you have lost your mind. Yeah.
I love these characters.
But the oligarchs are turning against him, and it's only a matter of time. And I believe her 100%.
And we're having the independence movement, so we're having a little bit of like the 1990s
era. It's a Boris Yeltsin thing going on.
Exactly. Our era, 1990s, where the Soviet Union comes apart, but it's now starting to happen within people pushing for independence movements, and it's being kicked off a bit by Mars. Mars is kind of the powder keg.
Exactly.
Dev has rigged the security system that they're able to send Palmer in to do something, probably nothing good.
Mm.
And this is where we find out that Lily wakes up Alex at 3 a.m. to say happy birthday and to tell him to come to the dome. And this is a very fun, for a little while, scene.
It is.
Where Alex takes a breath mint. He's doing push-ups to try and make himself look for... This is... Teenage boy, I think they've done a great job.
Yep.
They show up. He's got there's a picnic. She's left him a note, and he thinks, I'm getting lucky. And so, of course, he starts
unbuttoning his shirt,
taking his shirt off and getting undressed. And then all of a sudden,
all the teenagers of Mars come in
and dance to a choreographed
song. Do like
song.
A TikTok dance kind of thing. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Which is very funny. And then they are immediately startled when Lee interrupts them. And then, of course, also starts dancing.
Okay, a couple thoughts here. First off, I had this thought, which is the vibe in this moment, and it changes rapidly, but the vibe in this moment really reminded me, it actually kind of gave me some pandemic thoughts.
Yeah.
But also, this was a particularly fraught day in geopolitics, or week in geopolitics. We're having them all the time now when I watch this episode. And I thought, part of the vibe here is like, you know, bad things are happening all around you. Real life happens. And like, you need to
celebrate.
Moments. You need to find the joy when you can, where you can. I thought that was kind of beautiful about this. The idea that she created this thing and they were not on fertilizer duty. They were practicing to do this for his birthday for their friend. There's not a lot of, like, they're embargoed basically. So there's not like physical presence you could give, but you could do this thing. And when Lee comes out, I immediately was like, well, he's going Gangnam Style here, right?
Yes.
That's what's going to happen, which is what happened. So it's like, he's part of the thing too. And it's all very joyous, Dan.
Yeah.
The end.
The end. But Jason, it's an episode of For All Mankind.
It is.
It's a season in which, you know what, we really haven't had terrible disaster.
Yeah.
And now it's time, as suddenly there's a crack in the dome.
In the dome.
And everything goes bad.
And the dome cracks and falls, and the air is rushing out of the dome.
Very interesting, sort of the way they shoot this, right? Mm. It keeps basically going to black. They do a lot of the no sound, and we see like glimpses of people, like all the stuff getting sucked out of the dome, and people are trying to like get out. And it's, I mean, in true For All Mankind fashion, it is harrowing to watch all of this. Amazingly, what we learn later is, so the only person who dies is their friend, the Russian girl, Gulen. I can't remember her name. They did not do a great job of, like, she's been around. I can never remember her name. Gulenova?
Gully, they call her. But yeah.
Gully, yeah.
Yeah.
She dies.
She dies.
Several people are hurt.
7 injured, 2 critically. 6 domes are a total loss.
6 domes are,
this was Dev's plan.
Yeah,
is why don't we just blow up the domes and then and
again, this is the part
of the food source.
I 100% get on board with your point, which is I have a real hard time seeing Dev Palmer doing this. I buy.
Yeah,
he seems like a jerk. Dev doing this seems like, boy, he is like a psychopath.
The
at that
only
point.
Again. So yeah, I agree. I don't think this makes sense at all from Dev's perspective. The only thing I'm going to hold out a tiny, teeny, tiny bit of hope for is because what they've done is they've stopped the food supply. And what they are told is there's 2 weeks of food left, which, again, I have the point. It's like, it takes longer than 2 weeks to, like, is that, are they
to send a ship,
to surrender and send a ship? Or like, I mean, I don't even know how that works. Are they all, does this mean they're all going to die? Probably not, because they'll have, like, maybe even ISN will make sure that they don't die, but it's
forced
really
the
bad.
Issue. It feels like
the petition grows. Alita says she signed it. But like, here's the thing about Dev. The one thing I keep thinking, and I know I probably shouldn't, is this Dev's master plan to make everybody reliant on him? And then he has the solution to this, because secretly in the caves behind Helios, and I'm just making this up. I haven't seen this in the future, and I'm retconning it here. I haven't seen it. But like, I keep thinking, I really want to believe that that Dev's behavior here is that he doesn't intend for people to be in the domes. That's why it's at 2 a.m. or whatever. That he's not trying to like cut them off and their food supply off and make them do a quick surrender. He's actually got a bigger move, which is he's going to move everybody into the place where he's already building the Mars city or whatever. I just don't think that's, I don't think that's actually the case. I'm just trying to come up with a better solution than this, because this solution is stupid.
And I think that the tough part there is like, well, but everybody, as they say, we know exactly who did this. Like, we know he did this. It's one thing to be like, hey, I've got this great extra, but it's like, yes, but you were the one who caused the problem.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard to feel like people would really see him as a savior when it's like, hey, don't worry about the fact that I bombed all your domes full of food, because I've got more food. Well, then why did you bomb the domes? that just makes people resent you more. So I just don't. Either he's crazy like a fox, or this whole plot line is a little bit.
I have a hard time.
Kilter.
I have a hard time seeing the Dev that I feel like I know going all this way. It just Yeah, it troubles me.
So this causes, you know, problems. The petition to go back balloons. People want to go after Dev and Palmer. Dima's like, no, we can't keep fighting. But Miles doesn't want to back down and surrender. So we have a lot of discussion about, like, well, how are we going to get through this? And we get this sort of dovetailing at the end here where basically Kelly finds the plaque from, like, pulls out the plaque from Apollo 11 that Ed kept and decides that this is the time to really live up to her father's legacy, by which I mean pull some sneaky underhanded stuff. She essentially sabotages the computer so that it runs the wrong burn and basically sends them to Titan.
Yep.
And they have no choice but to try and make the landing, because otherwise they will die.
And this is another place where they do some character assassination on Walt. Because, like, he's like, I don't want to land on Titan. And they're like, well, we're going to Titan now. And like, can we do something else? And they're like, no. And he says, but I don't want to land. And they're like, you are dumb. We have to do this now. And I get that he doesn't want to do it. But, like, there's another portrayal of this where he's like, well, I guess we're committed. We have to go. And he's sort of seen as kind of an adult. And instead they do portray him as being just a fool.
Yeah. And I mean, that said, Kelly, her move here is, I think, real bad. I get her point, and I get what she's saying. Yeah. Like, we should be trying to do this. And it feels like, unfortunately, again, if we did not set up Walt as such a sack,
then Kelly's the villain here.
Exactly. Like, that, there's no reason for her to do this in that case either.
He's just like the principal at a school in a movie, or the police chief who's trying to stop the cop to do their job or whatever. And so you set up this kind of caricature of a foolish character so that your character can rebel against them and do the right thing that we all knew she should have done anyway. And like,
but it's
so
terribly awful thing to do.
Yeah. 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 It's not, it's
not
very,
to mention unsafe,
but she is Ed Baldwin's daughter. So I got to give her that. What would Ed do? He would totally do this.
Yeah. So back on Mars, because they hear about this, although let's, you know, wave our hands a little bit about the time difference. Like, it's conjoined in time. Obviously, they're listening to it, quote unquote, live.
Yeah.
But they are so far away that it's, you know, all this stuff has already happened.
Yeah.
But they decide what we need is a moment to bring everybody together. Therefore, let's pipe all the Sojourner landing on Titan.
Yeah.
Throughout the entire, you know, complex on Mars, so that everybody will be, you know, kind of like revisiting the moon landing, right? Everybody will be on the edge of their seat. We'll all be brought together by our Mars mission, you know, our mission that came from here, landing on Titan. And guess what? They land on Titan.
So there's a scene here that I really like, which is Miles saying, we need to broadcast this, and Alita saying, you know, this, they may all die. Maybe this will be really, really bad. And Miles says, maybe it won't. And I really like that. It's like, what, I mean, first off, it's like, what do I have to lose? But I like that kind of, like, this could be a great victory. Like, again, it's that, it's very much the way you approach, I mean, in space, it's like the open space program versus a closed space program. It's like, you can say everything we do, our failures and our successes, everybody can see, which has always been what NASA has done. And then there are other programs, and like the Soviet program was like this, where nobody knows anything. Because what if something bad happens? And only after it's all approved and good and successful do we tell people that it happened. And that's the argument here in a nutshell, in three lines of dialogue, which is like, but maybe it'll look bad. And he says, maybe it won't. And like, at this point, things are so bad that, like, getting it out there is the most important thing. So, it allows them to do the, you know, oh, and then we can't hear them. And what does that mean? Are they, it's like the end of Apollo 13. And like, it's this whole thing, loss of signal. Are they going to come back or not? It's like instant suspense.
Yeah. I think what's also interesting here is, you know, kind of looking at the trajectory of Miles from, you know, from last season, where he starts as kind of basically just like a schmo. A blue collar job, right? And then he works his way up. He's kind of working the black market. He becomes a businessman. This season, he's the respectable businessman, but now he's been thrust into this role. We all kind of know he's the coolest head here, but he's also decisive, right? He is the one who is, even though they have their council, he is the de facto leader. And I think we have positioned him to become sort of like essentially the first president of Mars, for lack of a better term. I feel like that's what they're kind of setting him up to be, is the leader of an independent Mars, even though, and I think in part because he doesn't want to be that. And that is, in some ways, what makes him most well-suited for the job, as opposed to basically anybody else who's there. And I think it's interesting, but there's also this whole other shoe to drop, because everybody keeps talking about how great he is. And it's like, well, we know he made some deals and stuff, right? Like, he did some dirty stuff that is probably going to come back to bite him in the ass. And it's unclear whether or not that'll be revealed by the end of the season or not. But, like, I mean, you know, we know we cut, like, a deal to get Lily out of prison. And he has worked with Palmer in the past and things like that. So he's an I really have warmed to him as a character.
Oh,
like,
I agree.
I didn't really know where he was going when we started out with him, but I feel like they've done a nice job of building him up over the course of these last couple seasons. And I really like him because he is a, even though he has compromises and he is a nuanced character, he is generally a good person.
Yeah.
And he is trying to do the right thing.
What I keep thinking about it is, like, I feel like this is a really good three-dimensional portrayal of a politician.
Yes.
Which is a good politician. Like, I think Miles is a good person who has some ideals and really wants the best for his people and feels like he's responsible for the people on Mars.
Yes.
But he has made a bunch of compromises. I won't even say mistakes, because I'm not sure they're mistakes. I mean, he made some mistakes last season because he was more dumb, but he learned, right? But like, in this season especially, like, are they mistakes or are they compromises to get what he feels is the right result? And like, a good person trying to navigate and make compromises when necessary in order to get the greater good, I think that's an interesting place for a character to be. And I agree. I think Miles is really interesting to watch because I think his heart is in the right place, but he, you know, he's done stuff. He's seen stuff, right? Like, that's part of it too.
Yeah. And he's clearly now becoming sort of the face of this, and which is probably good because you don't want the guy who wants to start shooting hostages.
Yeah.
that guy should not be in charge.
Like, the leaders really are like Miles and Lee, basically.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And so, we end with our triumphant landing on Titan, and they get to walk out down the ramp at the same time and set foot on a different moon.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I have a science note here, Dan.
Okay.
I love that they walked on the surface of Titan. I think it's really fun. I'll just say they seem to be wearing like a little like a Mars suit, like a thin skin suit, and I understand budgets, etc., etc.
It's a future suit.
But just to be clear, the temperature on the surface of Titan is 300 degrees below zero Fahrenheit or 180 degrees below zero Celsius. It is 90 Kelvin. So it's a real cold, like real, real, real cold. And they're going to catch the death of cold out there in those little suits. But anyway, I'll suspend my disbelief after this. I just wanted to say, because Titan is, for those who don't know about this, Titan is actually very interesting scientifically, because it has a thick atmosphere, it has rain, it has lakes, it may have volcanism, but because it's so cold, the rain is methane, water ice is rock, the lakes are methane, and the volcanism is, again, cryovolcanism. It's water ice being molten as water and erupting and then freezing back into rocks like rocks do on Earth, but it's water doing it there. So it's like an analog to Earth ecology, or not ecology, but like not the biosphere, because that life is a, you know, theory. It's just a theory, but it's atmosphere and its whole the whole geosphere of Titan is very familiar in some ways the most familiar of anything in the solar system to Earth, except at a much lower temperature. So it's actually a pretty cool place, and people have theorized that there could be life of a very different kind there. So it's fun that they're taking us to Titan. Titan is in many ways certainly the most accessible, interesting place that future spacefarers might go. And so I do like that about it. But again, I think they need to put on a sweater or something, because it's real cold there. But yeah, they did it.
They made it.
Kelly gets to be one, and they all step out together, which was this, you know,
it's a nice moment.
Instead of like somebody jumping ahead and being the first one on Mars, except for Lee, who was there and they didn't know. It's a great moment that reminds us again of what the show is. I had several moments where I'm like, yeah, you got to have this. This is part of what For All Mankind is. Space. I said this earlier on this season, right? It's like you got to have that Titan mission because space expanding. You know, going exploring other places like that is part of what For All Mankind is about. So to have it just be Mars politics would be disappointing. So I'm so happy that we got this part too.
Yeah, it is nice to have those as sort of a two-hander, like,
yeah,
and that they bring them together here. So I'm fascinated to see where we're going with this because Kelly's been looking for life for like
in all the wrong places.
A decade, a super long time, and maybe now it's gonna work out for her. So I guess we'll find out.
Maybe we will. I hopefully find out.
All right, well, that is it for episode 7.
All right,
full speed ahead to episode 8, I guess, and we'll see what lies ahead for our Titan groups and our Mars team.
What's on Titan?
All right,
maybe there's people.
Hello.
Sure,
welcome.
Yeah, why are you guys dressed so warmly, they'll say.
Somebody wanders by in like a Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah,
it's nice here. What are you doing?
Yeah, we got up to 90 Kelvin today. What are you talking about?
That's warm.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll be back next week to talk about episode 8. But until then, dos vidanya, Dan.
Dos vidanya, Jason.